The scene outside is one of total darkness. All the streetlights and buildings are dark. They struggle through the faint moonlight and a few car headlights to find their car, holding their butane lighters, which were intended to light the smoke bombs, above their heads for light, but the wind blows them out many times. When they get to their car, Mark calls Joe again. "Well, nothing happened at the club, but it's pitch dark outside around here. All the buildings and streetlights are out. The lights in the club are on as usual. You must have hit the wrong substation or something." "Yeah, I know. I already got a call," says Joe. "Don't know how the hell this happened. I know we had the right substation. I double-checked it myself. You guys better hurry over and see Pete. I've already called and told him what I know. He wants to ask you some questions." Mark and Sid get in their car. Mark says, "Give me your phone. I'm going to email the pictures we took at the club to Pete. Maybe that'll keep him happy. He's not going to like this." He pulls out his phone and sends his photos, then does the same for Sid's phone. By now, however, Mark's phone is sending audio back to Todd. Mark and Sid drive to the Regency through the darkened streets for their meeting with Pete. On the way, Mark says, "You don't think they were onto us at the club or anything?" "Nah. What was there to be onto us about? I guess you're right, but it was weird, man. Very weird that Joe got the wrong substation. He doesn't make mistakes like that. I wonder why the lights didn't go out. Don't ask me. I can't even change a light bulb. I don't understand those things," says Sid. "I know what Pete's plan B will be. This one sure didn't work, unless the goal was to put half the lights in Omaha out," says Mark. "That part he sure got right." "Yeah, bummer. Traffic signals are dead, too. Will you look at this traffic jam?" Time, 8:20 p.m. Lance joins the others in David's apartment while Mark and Sid drive to the Regency. Jay and Mary have retreated to the kitchen and are giggling about something which makes Mike and David very worried that a conspiracy is brewing. Mike anxiously says, "What are you two up to?" "Nothing, honey. Just girl talk," says Jay, followed by the sound of uncontrollable giggling. Now David and Mike are really worried. David says to Todd, "Well, while the Twisted Sisters plot their attack, did you get what you wanted from his cell phone?" "Oh yeah, lots. I got about 100 phone numbers. I replaced his SIM card with one of my own and my own operating system with a buttload of virus scripts. I own him, or at least his cell phone." "What's next?" asks Jay from the kitchen. "I infect every cell phone in his address book. Then I have those phones send me their address books and I do the same, and so on. I should own every phone in the organization within a day or two." "Ah, the wonders of technology," says Lance. "Nothing like good old-fashioned spyware, I say. If these people stuck to pops, plain old phones, instead of these walk-around computers, I wouldn't be able to do this. But they want games, internet access, MPEG players, you name it. That means an operating system, and that means security holes, so I own them." Mike says, "So what can you do? Read every number they call, for one thing. And I can reroute their calls through my system so I can listen in. I can turn their microphones on even when they think the phones are off and send the voice track back here. Of course, I get all their pictures and all their text messages, both incoming and outgoing. And I can make their phones cheat at solitaire." "Oh, you're the nasty one. Cheating at solitaire. That's unethical," says Jay, as she rejoins them in a voice of truly false concern. "But can you make their lithium-ion batteries explode? That's what I really want to know." "As a matter of fact, yes. But most times the batteries beat me to it without my help. They should be getting to the hotel by now. Let's see what we've got from Pete's laptop," says David as he brings up the display. They see Pete's room and Pete sitting in front of the laptop punching keys. "He's just got email with the photos those two took downstairs. Here, I'll pull them up from his hard drive," says Todd. A new window appears with a collection of thumbnails. Todd successively clicks on each one and a full-size version pops up. David says, "Looks about what I expected." "Yeah, I think so. But Lance, that picture of you, looks like you're putting on a little weight." "Keep it up, dude, and I'll sit on your face. Then guess my weight," says Lance with a frowning glance at Todd. "Okay, you two, go fight it out downstairs while you get ready for the sleepover. I'll page you when something happens," says David. Todd sneers at Lance and they leave. Jay decides to join them. She likes to feed the birds who get very excited when they see the cots rolled out. Mary, Mike, and David wait in David's apartment. Time, 10:45 p.m. Mark and Sid arrive at Pete's hotel about 10:45 p.m. The lights are back on in downtown Omaha, but traffic is snarled in all directions. They park their SUV behind the hotel and walk up the dark alley to the front entrance. Crossing the nearly empty lobby, they ride the glass-enclosed elevator to the ninth floor and walk around the building on an inside corridor, as all the suites at this level have balconies overlooking the atrium. "And that's it," says Mark as they come to the middle of the hall. "Room 924," as he knocks on the door. After a few seconds, Pete opens it and says, "Come on in, guys. What the hell happened over there tonight?" "Nothing. Not a damn thing," says Mark as they enter. They take off their jackets and toss them on a chair. Pete says, "There's some beer in the minibar fridge. By the way, thanks. I got those photos you sent loaded on my laptop. They look good. I'm glad you took them. Now we need something else for tomorrow." Mark pulls a couple of cans of beer from the small refrigerator and hands one to Sid. Mark begins, "Well, Pete, we were ready, but nothing happened. We waited until 10:15, then called Joe. He said they blew the substation on time. When we got outside, everything was dark. Something had gotten blown, but it wasn't the power to the club. Half of Omaha has no lights right now. Geez, didn't the lights blink or anything?" "Nope, nothing. Nothing happened at all, but outside, pitch black. There was no power most of the way here. Big traffic jam on Dodge Street. A lot of signal lights are out. Well, the lights here went out for a few seconds. Whatever Joe hit was big. They were talking about it on the news. It seems that substation took out several others and nearly caused some big generators to shut down, says Pete. I guess they must have had their own emergency generator or something. It's the only thing I can think of, says Sid. So, cutting the power is not an option. Damn it, we need to try something else. Come over here and go over these pictures with me and let me know what you found out about the place. Pete sits in front of the laptop and they pull up a couple of chairs behind him. He fills the screen with a mosaic of their photos and begins asking them details about each, including which side of the club, north, south, etc., they were taken from. He makes notes. Mark tells Pete what he learned about the elevator shaft and the sliding door to the loading dock. Pete asks if the door from the elevator room to the main club can be locked. Mark says he saw a shuttle bolt on the inside of the door. Okay, is there any way they could have ID'd you two? No, we've never met Mike in person. We've only talked to him on the phone, so he doesn't know what we look like, says Mark. That's right, I've never met him in person either. There's no way he could have ID'd us. Okay, back to the club. I'm real interested in this loading dock door beside the freight elevator. Tell me more about it, says Pete. Well, it's a steel door that slides open. There are tracks above and below. It's bolted shut at one end, but the bolt isn't secured or anything. You could just pull it up and slide the door open, says Mark. So, I guess we can count on that door opening if we want it, says Pete. You bet. What about the main door security? Pretty tight. They have a couple of bouncers there and a metal detector. Would probably be tough to get a gun in there, if that's what you mean. Yeah, that's what I mean, says Pete. Finally, he asks, anything else? They have a security camera pointed out the main door, so anyone entering is probably being photographed, says Sid. About as I thought. Pretty standard practice these days. I guess that's all we saw, said Sid. Mark nods. At about 11:15, Pete finally says, good. I guess that's it for tonight. Come back here tomorrow morning at 9. Joe will be here, and we'll have breakfast, and I'll fill you in on what we do next. This time, we got to get this thing done right. Certain people are not patient, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I think we do, says Mark, as he and Sid grab their coats and leave. Time, 11:15 p.m. David and Mike watch all of this from David's apartment, while Lance, Todd, and Jay see it on Todd's console on the club floor. After Mark and Sid leave, they all meet back in David's apartment to plan what to do next. Lance says, seems like he's planning to do a break-in. So far, no mention of Jay, so they probably don't know about her. Seems they're only after you, Mike. Yeah, I agree, says Todd. Jay's off the radar screen. For once, it's nice to be ignored, mutters Jay. Well, if he's planning a break-in, how's he going to get in? He knows the main door is secure. The other doors are on alarms and locked. The old loading dock door is bolted. The door we take our supplies is guarded and can be bolted shut. What's he got in his mind, says David. He must have some scheme to get in through the old loading dock door, says Lance. He seems more interested in that door than any of the others. If that's his plan, I can fix it so that door can't be open. It's solid steel. There's no way he can force it. Whatever they're going to try, at least we know they're coming. But maybe we should let them do their break-in and burn them. It won't make Pete look good, and it may take him off our back for a while, says Todd. Right. It's the only time we need, says Jay. Once writer boy finishes, poof, no more Jack problem. That's professional journalist person, not writer boy, if you please, sniffs Mike. Anyway, Jack's not going to back off for long, but if we busted them, it might slow him down a bit and make him move more cautiously. That would buy me some more time. Once I publish what I've got, he'll have a lot more immediate problems to deal with. So, what have we got? It appears they might try it tomorrow, says Lance, probably through the old loading dock door. So, we let him in and bag him? Yeah, that's the general idea until we know more. Maybe by tomorrow we can pick up something on the audio bugs of the cell phone, says David. What about the timing? Do you think they'll really try tomorrow night, asks Todd? Oh, yeah. That's what they said, and I believe him. I don't think Pete can wait, says Jay. I expect he's in a real hurry to deliver. Jack's not in a forgiving mood. That I can be sure of. Jack must know what we've got by now, and he's shitting a brick. Yeah, tomorrow night, most definitely. He's in a hurry, says Lance. We'll just have to see what they say tomorrow morning. Maybe we can find out what he has in mind then. By the way, Mikey, just in case, where did you put the title to the car? Asks Jay. Jeez, I'm not dead yet. Just checking, honey. You can tell me later. Just as I thought, it's really the car she's after, not me. No, you're good. But I could use some wheels, too, just in case. Chapter 4, Thursday, January 9. Time, 9 a.m. Joe, Mark, and Sid arrive at Pete's hotel room around 9 a.m. After they toss their coats and sit down, Pete says, here's some copies of the building inspector's blueprints for that club. Let's go downstairs and get some breakfast and go over them. Back at Mulroon, a groan goes up. Damn, I thought we'd be able to watch them from his laptop camera, says David. We might have audio. I'm in contact with Mark's cell phone. I'll send it a command to start transmitting audio, says Todd. We may still be able to hear them. Pete and his group get a secluded table and visit the breakfast buffet. Returning to their table, Pete begins. Okay, guys, I've been going over these pictures from last night and the building diagrams. Tonight we're finishing this mic business, and we're leaving a little message for the news networks not to fuck with us again. Todd has a control window open on David's monitor, and he's making adjustments to parameters on the cell phone of the breakfast party. Only muffled sounds of voices emanate from the speakers. It's no use. Mark must have his phone in his pants pocket under the table. I'm getting audio, but it's way too distorted, and I can't clean it up in real time. I'll record it and see if I can do something about it later. But for the moment, no audio. David suddenly says, hey, Todd, God, try ringing Mark's cell phone and saying, sorry, wrong number. He might leave it on the table. Good idea. I'm doing it now, says Todd.